Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchup, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Hello and welcome to the Gegenpressing Podcast. My name is Stefan Binkowski and I'm joined by Manu Ved. I know Manu is usually the first voice you hear when we do this show, but he has taken up the task of being a roving reporter this week, or this weekend, rather shall I say. He's put his feet up now that he's back in good old Bavaria. And I think he's looking forward to a nice week off. But Manu, you did a lot of work this week, this weekend. I didn't. I sat on my couch looking after a friend's dog. So we figured it would make sense if I hosted this one and you did most of the talking. So yeah, I'll get started with how you doing. Nice to be back in Germany.
Yeah, it's really good to be back. Landed Friday, had a few hours with my family, and then Saturday morning jumped on a train to Stuttgart. I gotta say, the Deutsche Bahn, hugely impressive this weekend. I had three train journeys and a combined delay of just 15 minutes. 15 minutes. I put that in our Gegenpressing chat and I got a wow back from Sepp Stafford-Blohr, who is a regular customer of the Deutsche Bahn and regularly delayed. So, well done, Deutsche Bahn. Got me everywhere I wanted to go on time. I think it was even 1 minute early today into Munich, which is hugely impressive. So yeah, was in Stuttgart, have some really cool things that I get to share later on, because I got a bit of a tour from Stuttgart and the new infrastructure around the stadium. The MHP Arena looks mightily impressive. It needed that facelift. It really did. But they did a fantastic job. It's actually, you know, interior-wise and with the infrastructure that they have, rivals the Allianz Arena. It's top-notch. It's really, really good. And then, of course, they were also fantastic on the field. Pretty sure we'll get to talk about that. And then I was in Frankfurt on Sunday. Hugely impressive stadium, always has been. Not so impressive a result for them. They got absolutely demolished, Stefan. And I'm sure we're going to get talked about that too. But I guess we're going to start with the Bayern game.
Well, we've actually got some breaking news we have to talk about first before we get onto your your little trip around Germany. Of course, as most people listen to this will know, or if they don't know and they listen to the show for their information, Union Berlin have parted ways with their head coach. Bielica has been, I don't know if they've sacked him or put him on gardening leave, but regardless of the jargon that was used, he has been moved on, who himself was, of course, the replacement to Urs Fischer back in January or December, I believe it was. This obviously falls on the back of a quite dramatic 4-3 defeat at home to Bochum. A result which now means that Union Berlin are just 1 point above Mainz in the the playoff relegation spot. A Mainz side, by the way, who haven't lost a game in five. And Bochum, who have now won back-to-back games and now, curiously, host Leverkusen next. So wouldn't that be something if they were the team to ruin that or to end that unbeaten run for Xabi Alonso's side? But yeah, first of all, let's go to this Union Berlin game. I know you watched this game, Manu. I was taking it in as well. It's I have some thoughts on Union Berlin and what's happened this season, but I'll let you jump in and just kind of talk about the game itself, maybe.
So I watched this in the press rooms at the Waldstadion in Frankfurt, and obviously it was the talk, right? Because it was 3-0 at halftime, and a bunch of us journalists were saying to each other, we wouldn't be shocked if Bjelica was gone at halftime. And then there was this really surprising second half where they looked like they were going to get it back, right? Mm. And the game ends 4-3, they still lose it. But that first half was, there's a really good German word to describe what the Union players were doing. It's called Arbeitsverweigerung, the refusal to work, to translate it. And I think that is a really fitting term here for what we saw from this Union Berlin side. It's like they weren't on the field. And that's shocking at home. I think, you know, Union Berlin have built a sort of reputation that the Alte Försterei is a fortress, right? Mm-hmm. And that it is a place where no matter where they are on the table and what the situation is like, they are always going to be very good at home. There's a saying in North American sports, if you need to stink, stink on the road. That's what Union Berlin always has done. But, you know, like, they stunk at home and really badly. And I think that first half, that's unacceptable. And although things have gotten briefly better under Bjelica, he hasn't really been able to stabilize the ship, right? There was that altercation with Leroy Sané, remember that? Where I thought they should have actually fired him right there and then. He just didn't seem right. Like a lot of things that they've done this year didn't seem right. And so, you know what I think this is? This is very consequential at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's been such a bizarre one for Union Berlin. I kind of feel like that result and that performance maybe sums up the season quite a lot, mm-hmm. actually, to be honest with you. They've just been an absolute circus, to be perfectly honest with you. Also, Bielsa came in at the end of November, first Bundesliga game in December. He actually had a really good start, if you can remember. Yeah. He only picked up like 3 defeats in his first like 10 or 12 Bundesliga games. And it seemed as though everything was going well. And then there was that 2-0 defeat to Dortmund in March, and it just kind of kicked off this run where they only picked up 1 win after that. Do you know, we were discussing it in the subscriber chat this week with some Union Berlin fans, and I was saying that, you know, I do have such mixed feelings about this because I feel like Union Berlin coming up and the run that they've made and the kind of dash to the kind of Champions League spots that they made was just, it was just incredible. It was like Bundesliga history in the making, in the sense that, you know, everyone was cheering them on. It was international news. There was discussion about them being like genuine title contenders. I can't help but just kind of feel like, and maybe this is a bit of a cliche, but it's like that old kind of, I can't remember if it was Greek or Roman tale, but you know, the one of Icarus who flies too close to the sun. I think it's Icarus.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was Icarus. It's Icarus because I always get him confused with Hermes. Yeah, Hermes, the one with
the one with the wings on the boots,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I remember that because it's also the delivery service. Anyway, Union Berlin were like Icarus. That's what I'm trying to say. Because they obviously got this huge influx of money from qualifying for the Champions League, and you know, from speaking to people at the club, it just strikes me as they basically got too much too quickly. They bit off more than they could chew. There's been a huge turnover of staff at that club, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well. You know, you're talking about like administrative levels, coaching levels, or even boardroom levels as well. And it's just been absolute chaos, to be honest with you. And, you know, you can even just go through the team that they've got this season, and there's so many examples of players that just have been absolute chaotic signings. You know, like in defence, you've got Leonardo Bonucci, the player who refused to come on, or I can't remember what happened in the Champions League specifically, but I can't remember if he refused to come on or went to half when he couldn't get on, or was he excluded from a squad or something?
He refused to come on because he wasn't in starting 11, and then he essentially phoned Fabrizio Romano and told him he wanted to leave.
That's right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what it was. There's signing Robin Gosens, which was an odd one. Like a German international, wasn't sure what was happening there. There's David Datro-Fofana, the player they brought in on loan, who was sent back in January because he wasn't doing anything. There was a whole fiasco over Gerardo Becker, who was sold in January. Jordan Sibachu, who I think a lot of American listeners will know about, that was a whole fiasco as well. He was sent off to Gladbach. And of course, Kevin Behrens, who, you know, was a bit of a hero at this club once upon a time, left for Wolfsburg in January as well. So the turnover of players in this team is just absolutely crazy. And I think that comes with in front of the backdrop of a club that has been absolutely crazy this season. And, you know, I think best case scenario, they go down to this five Bundesliga, they get their stuff together, they get the ducks in a row, and they can kind of figure out what they are and then make another move back at it. But unfortunately, the kind of reality of this five Bundesliga these days is that when you get knocked down, it's hard to come back up again. But yeah, it's just a club in absolute chaos right now.
I think you sum it up really well there. You know, my only thoughts, you touch on this, is that going down to the second Bundesliga isn't what it used to be, right? Where you can kind of shake yourself off and come back and, you know, be better. That's extremely difficult now. And even when you do come back, you see that with Schalke, you often take such a big hit that the damage is so great that it's hard to come back and then reestablish yourself. I think ultimately, what happened this year is this: they always been a club of great turnover, but the turnovers used to follow a plan. And I think they got into the Champions League and they received all this money. And it's kind of like the way I compare it is when you turn on the editor mode at Football Manager, right? And you have unlimited money, and then you just buy all these guys, and all of a sudden you have like five left backs because you can't get a hold of yourself, and you know you just keep buying players because like buying players is fun on Football Manager, right? And it's exciting and all that, but that's really like such a small part of the game. And the ones who are good at Football Managers often don't buy many players at all, right? They keep the squad together, and I think that's kind of what happened to them. They turned on the editor mode with the Champions League money, and then all of a sudden they had five strikers, and oh, we still have Jordan, what are we going to do with him? Oh, I send him on a loan. And then they realize, oh, actually that would have been quite a useful piece to keep. And then, you know, the guy that was the club legend is gone because there's someone else playing there, but that damn person Chelsea wants to have back. And it's just, you know, they threw the plan overboard because of the money that they received. And it's such an incredible cautionary tale for anyone else that could happen to. You know, we'll talk about one example in Stuttgart, right? We would very much are going to walk into this very similar scenario with reaching the Champions League this year. And I personally think that if you are a club this year, you might want to avoid relegation, because I think Fortuna Düsseldorf, if they are the club to finish third, are going to be a very difficult opponent. That's not something you want to face, especially if you are a Union Berlin or Bochum, who are maybe not at their best for their respective, for different reasons, right? But if you are chaos, in total chaos like Union Berlin, you want to avoid the relegation playoffs this year, because I think Fortuna really have their ducks in a row. This is a very well-run club, and you just don't want to face that, right? You don't want to face the prospect of that something could just go wrong, or maybe that everything that's going on the outside could derail your chances. So I think Union Berlin needs to avoid the relegation playoffs. Like if Mainz, for example, play the relegation playoffs against Fortuna, I think where they are at right now, I think they will be fine. You know what I mean? Because I think they have better quality, and they're in a good place. Even though, you know, that would still be disappointing for them, but because of Bo Henriks and then everything that's been happening, and they're on a positive run, I think that would put them in a positive enough place, similar to Stuttgart last year, that they'll be fine. Union Berlin play those games in the chaotic situation that they're in, I think there's a real chance they go down.
Yeah. So I mean, I think I don't want to really write them off just yet, because there is...
No, I wouldn't either.
Yeah, because, I mean, we can maybe just wrap up this part of the show by talking about the remaining fixtures, and they do still kind of have it in their own hands. They go away to Cologne, which obviously is a really big kind of relegation six-pointer. A Cologne side who are all but down. It's not official yet, but 5 points off the playoff spot, 6 points off Union Berlin, so probably a little too far for them now. But yeah, they go away to Cologne. Then they have Freiburg in the last day of the season, who have got very little to play for themselves. Freiburg, as evidence from that, as evidence
for the European spot, the seventh.
If they were still fighting for that, they would have shown that in their 0-0 draw with Cologne this week, in my opinion.
You make a good point.
But what also probably will also play in Union's favour is that Mainz have Dortmund and then Wolfsburg. That's the last two remaining games. Dortmund, who we'll come on to talk about in a moment, but also Wolfsburg side, who I mentioned this weekend. Since Ralf Hasenhüttl's come back, I think the stat was that I came up, I didn't come up with, I found. They've been the second best team in the Bundesliga, I believe. I'll be able to tell you in 1 second. Here we go. Only one club, yeah, in the Bundesliga picked up more points than Wolfsburg since Hasenhüttl came back. So Mainz up against it with two teams that really should beat them, whereas Union have, in my opinion, two winnable games there. Yeah. So it's still in their own hands. And we'll have to kind of wait and see what happens there.
You've got to beat Köln. Got to beat Köln.
And if you don't, you don't deserve to be in the Bundesliga.
Totally. I agree.
Also, maybe worth mentioning that I think this was also made apparent in between the previous head coach appointment, but one of the club's youth academy players, youth academy coaches, Marie-Louis Etta, has also been once again promoted back to the first team coaching staff, if I'm not mistaken. She's an under-19 coach. Which is also very exciting. It's good to see, obviously, some female representation in the coaching staff in the Bundesliga. And she's obviously making a bit of a name for herself, I think, at Union Berlin. So that's good to see. She's obviously part of this kind of interim team. So we'll see what happens there.
Can we touch on that real quick? Because did you see what happened in the Dritte Liga with Ingolstadt?
No.
They have appointed a female coach, and she's doing really well. Let me just get her name real quick. Her name is, hold on, I want to mention this because this is a good story. Wittmann. And she is the first, she's the head coach. She's not just in the coaching staff, she's the actual head coach. And she's the first head coach of a professional team in German football. And there's a good chance she will be permanent.
Well, that's good to see. It makes perfect sense to me. I don't understand why we limit head coaches to the gender of the players in the change room. We certainly don't do the same for the women's team, so I don't understand why we do the same for the men's team.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we'll see more and more of that, especially considering some of the tired, drawn-out faces that we see getting jobs over and over again in the Bundesliga.
I think it's great. It's so refreshing. It's a different perspective, and new ideas is always something good, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, let's move on to some of the games that you actually attended this weekend. Mm-hmm. Should we talk about your trip to Stuttgart first?
Yeah, we should, because that was an excellent game.
Yeah, so this was a game that I think we both predicted. I don't know if we both predicted Stuttgart would win.
I said 2-2, you said 3-2.
Right, so it was a game that we both expected Stuttgart to step up to show up for. Mm. We both maybe had our trepidation over Bayern's commitment to the tie. Obviously, Bayern have very little left to play for, but as we said on the preview show, Stuttgart obviously playing for bragging rights, playing for second place. You don't get a chance to finish above Bayern Munich in the table all that often. And Stuttgart did exactly that. I was watching this game, and I think it was maybe the 25th minute or something before I realised that I hadn't actually looked up and seen Bayern out of their own half yet.
Yeah.
It was a truly remarkably dominating performance from Stuttgart, wasn't it?
It was hugely dominating. I mean, they finished the game 60% possession, right? And that's the way that they play football, right? They are very... You close your eyes, well, can't close your eyes, but if you look away at the team names, you think there's a Leverkusen team playing down there, right? Mm. They don't have quite as effective tools yet. You know, that might still come because I do think they have a coach who is just as talented as Javi Alonso. You know, he's getting more than the maximum out of these teams. When you look up and down the squad, there's so many players in the squad that always had the talent but never really got to fulfill it. Dennis Undav comes to mind, right? Serhu Gurassi, Angelo Stiller is another one. Waldemar Anton, who I watched, we've got to watch first time for full 90 minutes and really got to focus a little bit on him. Impressive. You know, he's one of the best defenders in the Bundesliga without a doubt. And he was always was a player that had that sort of potential, but never really got out of it. And we talk about this with Dortmund, for example, all the time, right? How they have so many talented players and they don't get the best out of it. And often that's because of the coach. And Sebastian Hoeneß, they have one of the best. Christian Führich is another one, right? Was just so hugely impressive. And then it's also the changes that they make. He brings on Silas and Jong, and the two essentially combine to finish the game off, right? Silas with the cross to Jong to make it 2-1, and then Silas makes it 3-1. So, you know, like Alonso too, his game management is excellent. He knows when to make the right choices, bring on the right players. It's hugely impressive to watch. And yeah, maybe this Bayern side wasn't 100% there. I talked to a few Bayern players after the game. Manuel Neuer, for example, was adamant that they want to finish second this year. Stuttgart want to finish second as well because it comes with a financial bonus, right? There's significant television money attached to it, but also for them, that would mean they will get to host this DFL Super Cup, which for the players is more, and Matt Ford always says this is a glorified friendly. That's true, but you make a lot of money hosting it. Right? Because you host it in your own stadium, that is quite a lot of money. It's a game that the DFL ships all the international media to, so you get a lot of attention. For them, it would be an ability to showcase that stadium, right, that they've just finished. They would get to host Leverkusen, and you get an extra 3 million, 2.5 to 3.5 million, depending on whether you finish it as winner or second place of two, I should say. But, you know, that's enough money for them to sign a player, right? Yeah. To pay the salary of a really good player. So I think that is quite significant for them. And I just thought they came up with a really mature performance. And the players have been really vocal about the fact that they are the second best team in Germany and that they want to prove it by finishing second. Good on them. They came out to play. And although, you know, there was a lot of Bayern, we need to talk about this as well. There's a lot of Bayern players that were playing for a potential position in that starting 11 against Real Madrid, and none of them showed up.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about this. I think it's often downplayed or maybe not even thought about how much, like, incentive plays a part in how hard a footballer tries or how well they play, because, you know, we all like to think these players are just little robots like they are on, like, your PlayStation when you play FIFA or something like that, but they're not. They're all human beings, and even if they genuinely think that they'll try subconsciously, certain things can take over and they just don't. And I'm sure every Bayern player went out in that game with the intention of trying, but for the most part, it just felt like a game in which no one was all that bothered. And I thought even the first goal was a good example of that, where, you know, it's just a simple chip over the back line. Alphonso Davies either isn't paying attention or just simply doesn't care.
A little bit of both.
Yeah, maybe a bit of both, considering the way it's gone this season. And it's just kind of, you know, it's a goal that's tapped past Neuer. Yep. Second goal, I actually think Manuel Neuer probably should be doing better with that. I'm usually a little more critical of goalkeepers than you are, but it's not exactly a fast header at his front post. I actually thought he looked a little kind of jaded or just aloof throughout this match, to be honest with you. I think he more than a lot of them gave the impression it felt like a friendly or something. And I don't know, it was a game that was just kind of errors all over the place. Upamecano didn't really do much to suggest that he should be in the starting 11. Kim, much the same. And, you know, Thomas Tuchel was obviously complaining about, you know, injuries to his team. Yeah. You know, he was obviously, Guerrero went off and Eric Dier was pulling a Terry Butcher with his kind of blood-soaked head bandage throughout the game. But I was talking to someone today about this, and you know, they were asking for my opinion on Tuchel's complaints about injuries, and yeah, he has had injuries this season. But I think what he really means when he says, you know, we've been plagued by these issues throughout the season, I think what he's really getting at is that it's not so much that Barn have had injuries. The problem is that when they have these injuries, they have to turn back on the players who just simply haven't been performing or simply aren't good enough. Mm. Perfect example of that is obviously Alfonso Davies, who stepped in there for this game for Mazraoui, basically didn't really do much. Serge Gnabry, pretty poor. I was delighted to see that dive for the penalty, in my opinion, did not end up costing Stuttgart points, because I thought it was an atrocious call. You know, Choupo-Moting stepping in didn't do anything at all. Kim, we've talked about him recently, how he's had a real kind of big drop off. Choupo-Moting, I've mentioned, and you know, this is just kind of the fault that this Bayern team has. It's not so much that they've been injury ravaged, it's the fact that the injuries have forced Tuchel to use these kind of older players who either are past their prime or stopped caring about winning Bundesliga titles 2 or 3 seasons ago. And that's fundamentally the issue here. They all step up for the Champions League, but none of them seem that bothered about the Bundesliga, and I think that's probably quite telling. And it was just another week of torment for Bayern fans, unfortunately. But yeah, as you said, Stuttgart, outstanding. Tactically, in the way they played, very exciting football. You know, the comparison to Xabi Alonso's Leverkusen, I think, are apparent and intentional. And, you know, to draw a comparison to players who don't care anymore, the way that, for example, Furyk was just running up and down that wing, desperate to take on Joshua Kimmich whenever he got the chance, desperate to cut inside and put a goal past Manuel Neuer. It's as if he was watching, it's as if Julian Nagelsmann was sitting in the front row and he was saying, look at me, I'm here, I'm committed, I'm playing well against a team like Bayern Munich. My team are pushing for second place in the Bundesliga. I should be starting for Germany this summer. And he was light years ahead of the German players in that Bundesliga, in that Bayern team. And he's just one example. You can name a bunch. Even though Lindorf didn't score, I thought he was outstanding.
Yeah.
Gerassi was outstanding. And yeah, and it was good to see Stuttgart get what they deserved, I think.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I briefly want to touch on the whole Bayern injury thing. Thomas Tuchel complained about the post-game, right? He was asked whether he realized that Real Madrid rotated 10 players. And he said, basically, a paraphrase, they have the squad for it. Read between the lines what he means with that, right? I think that Bayern Munich have the depth in squad, but these injury problems aren't just this year. They had this problem last year as well, right? And the issue is that they have a lot of players that have probably been playing too long at this club at this level. And we've mentioned this throughout the season, that the squad isn't good enough, right? They're good enough for these big moments where they pull themselves all together and they step it up, and I actually still think that they're going to beat Real Madrid and reach the final. But let's be honest here, they're not good enough for a 34-game Bundesliga campaign. There's just other teams that are better. And there is, you know, there was a couple of people, I think, that complained that I keep calling Stuttgart the second-best team in the Bundesliga. Fine. When they finish second in the Bundesliga, because I'm pretty sure they will, then I will keep saying it. Because, you know, there's players in that Stuttgart side that are just at a better, fitter level, and they're just on a level where they are willing to compete and play for their spots. And you know, there's a lot of players in that team as well that are fighting to be signed by Stuttgart, right? And that is obviously something that Stuttgart are now working on already for the next season, and that's something that's very difficult for them. And you know, they are looking at Union Berlin and what went wrong there. They don't want this. They don't want this to be a one-time thing. They build an infrastructure around the club that puts them into a marketing position where they want to play international football every single year. It doesn't need to be the Champions League, but internationally, right? So they need to make some really smart decisions, and a lot of the players at the club know that. Like, I asked, for example, some people at Stuttgart about Dennis Undav, because I'm really curious what's going on there, right? And the thing with Dennis Undav is, although the buying him from Brighton is not the issue here, They can buy him tomorrow if they wanted to. They have the money. Same is true, by the way, for Jamie Leveling, right? That was another report that was out there whether Stuttgart can afford him. The fee isn't the issue here. It's the salary, Stefan. Mm-hmm. They don't want to sign contracts with players that if they do not play Champions League the year after, they have a white elephant, right? The equivalent of a football player equivalent of a white elephant, you know. They don't want to be tied to contracts that could financially damage them in the long term. So they're just careful. So when you hear reports about them being worried about the financial implications with signing players like Dennis Undav and Jamie Leveling, and I'm pretty sure that they're going to work out deals where that's going to be possible, it's the Union Berlin thing. They don't want to be tied to contracts that if something goes wrong, they cannot afford, right? So that's, I think, what you're reading there between the lines. And, you know, that's, I find that really fascinating because I think they're looking at cautionary tales around the league, but also their own, right? Because they have enough cautionary tales themselves to understand that what happens if you reach the Champions League and then you go into building a squad that can play in the Champions League, but maybe is, from a financial standpoint, not long-term sustainable, right? And I think that's really fascinating. So, but that also then generates this aspect of these players actually, oh, what do you mean? Like, we need to work for play for a contract, and this is not a given that you're going to sign us. And that creates this hunger for them, for these players to wanting to prove themselves. That's why a Dennis Undav runs for 90 minutes, right? That's why Chris Führich goes out against Kimmich 12, 20 times a match. And that, I think, is very much part of what they're trying to do. And I'm pretty sure, you know, they go out and sign someone like Woltemade from Werder Bremen, really talented striker, right? Because they know that if someone like Sergio Gorassi or Dennis Undav leaves, that's another young, hungry striker, German, right? They really emphasize this as well, who is willing to fight for the club and also fight for the long-term sustainability. And I think that you can only do if you have a head coach who has a plan, and that's what they do. And, you know, we should probably touch on the head coaching search at Bayern as well, while we at it, right?
Yeah, we probably should, because it is kind of chalk and cheese right now. Obviously, just before we came on air there's news of West Ham appointing Julian Lopetegui.
Oh, can I talk about that real quick? Because that link to Bayern is absolute bullshit.
Well, that's exactly why I've teed you up to do exactly that. But yeah, there was a report in England that he turned down Bayern Munich for the opportunity to move to West Ham.
Yeah.
But Manu, you believe otherwise.
As it is my job, I talk to some people, and obviously Bayern Munich are going to be defensive about this. And yes, they know that they are certainly is enough reason out there to make fun of them and the way that they have behaved and the way things have gone on the coaching search. But there's a lot of coaches out there right now who are releasing statements that they have turned down Bayern Munich and are happy where they are, right? Unai Emery comes to mind. I'm sure Aston Villa gave him some extra money when he dropped the name Bayern Munich, right? Does that mean Bayern Munich were really interested in Unai Emery? No. Does that mean the agent maybe puts it out there? Sure, 100%. That's the same with Lopetegui. Is the name right?
Lopetegui, yeah.
Yeah, Lopetegui, sorry. Yeah, no. That's not a serious name. Eberl, on record, actually called out Roberto De Zerbi's interview with Brighton and sort of made fun of it. You know, the exact quote was that he now has to ask staff members whether some coach somewhere has now renewed his contract or declared that they were going to stay with their home team just to make sure that they don't have accidentally maybe asked a coach to sign for Bayern. You know, so not everything that you hear out there with those links are true. I think too that means that they are a little bit lost though when it comes to finding a new head coach, because I think they had that figured out, right? Max Eber pretty much confirmed that everything they thought they had Ralf Rangnick signed. He said we're not starting at zero, but you know, reading again between the lines, they are. And so, yeah, not everything that you read out there and the statements that are made. I mean, I don't want to go after other journalists' reports because I'm sure they are told that by reliable sources. I'm sure West Ham went out of the way to maybe give their new head coach a little bit extra money to ensure that that they get their guy trying to fight off Bayern, quote unquote, right? But it's simply not true. It's just not true.
Yeah, it makes for a really interesting kind of situation for Bayern, which we undoubtedly will have to cover in its own show at some point, because the kind of carousel of people linked is getting ridiculous. I said on social media today that I was reading in the Kicker this morning that I can't even finish the sentence without laughing. But some at Sabina Strasser are harboring hopes of bringing Pep Guardiola back to the God. Club.
I read that and I almost fell off my chair.
2020, yeah. The man who's still struggling, I know he already has one, but you'd think he should have won a few more. But the man who's continued tussles with the Champions League with the most expensively assembled squad of all time is going to ditch that for this Bayern Munich team at this moment in time strikes me as a little far-fetched. But yeah, so much to talk about in terms of, you know, potential head coaches, which I think we'll probably have to put a pin in Manu and talk about in a full show at some point once the Champions
League
stuff.
I just
want
to say one thing about Pep. One thing. Okay. Because there's a really interesting parallel between Bayern and Dortmund, that they are both still an absolute love with a former head coach that is not going to come back. And that's Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola is Bayern's Jürgen Klopp.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, because he was perfect for them. Let's be honest here. He was perfect for this club. He was this charming Spaniard who loves the city of Munich. And he still has an apartment here. And he talks about Bayern Munich all the time, right? Mm. And so they are absolutely in love with him. And they are heartbroken that he left them for Manchester City. And when you look at the lifespan of coaches since, what is it, the average? 1.7 years, right? Pep Guardiola is Bayern Munich's Jürgen Klopp. And stop it. He's not coming back. It's not happening. Right? So you got to move on. You know? The girlfriend broke up with you and she's married someone else. It's done.
Well,
okay, now we can put a pin in it.
Yeah. Talking about clubs who are in love with previous head coaches to clubs that remain are growing back in love with the head coach they've got. And moving on swiftly to Dortmund here, because a largely inconsequential game against Augsburg at the weekend. I actually didn't think they would do this well. I was quite surprised. Mm-hmm. But obviously, ahead of their PSG game, which Ethan Terzic labelled the club's most important game in 10 years, he more or less played the kids. And I was making a joke with our subscribers on Saturday morning that, you know, Dortmund aren't trying when Mori gets a game. The Spanish fullback has been, I think, locked in a cupboard for the last 3 or 4 years or something. Mm. That's found study on. But anyway, he played, did quite well. But, you know, I've started 11 Manu of backup players, youth players, with one huge exception, obviously, Marco Reus, who started, played tremendously well. His final game at the Westfalenstadion, I believe. And yeah, he got a hero's signing off, didn't he, from in front of the yellow wall. And confirmation that he'll be leaving the club at the end of the season. And it's the end of an era in the Bundesliga, I feel. I was doing some work for Indian TV and they had me on to talk about him. And I really do think, in a good way and a bad way, I think Royce really does kind of embody this, the era that we just had. If you want to kind of say the bookends of that era are Jurgen Klopp leaving the club or Jurgen Klopp getting to the Champions League final, and where we are now, that kind of span obviously has encompassed Royce's entire time at the club. But I think he does a good job of characterising a club that at times could be world-class, at times could challenge the very best, but for one reason or another, the wheels often came off the cart too soon in terms of, you know, Dortmund, all sorts of issues. But in terms of Royce, obviously injury just continues to plague him. And the most frustrating thing about Royce and Dortmund is that everyone knew how good they could be. Everyone knew the promise they had. I guess linking this up with the game in midweek, which we'll be covering with our usual reaction shows, but it'd be great if he could finish his time at Dortmund with that Champions League final.
and win it, right? I think this that would be a remarkable end. I've actually known for some time that this is going to end this year, and I was sworn to absolute secrecy not to reveal it, to spill the beans on this. I mean, you know, I've reported on the show, right, that he wants to go to the United States. So I guess I didn't really keep it too much of a secret, but this was coming, right? And people who listen to the show know this because I've reported it in the past that he's hugely interested to go to America. And, you know, if that was going to happen, it would have to happen now before his body completely breaks down. I talked to someone who's really close to Marco Reus, and that poor person said, you know, Marco is a fantastic human being who works incredibly hard, but unfortunately his body is not built for professional football. And despite that, he still had this really long career, right? And I think that's a testament to the work ethic that he put in. And I think that's something that a lot of people underestimate, because his story has always been all these injuries, right? And that's his body just giving up. You know, a player that kind of comes to mind that was very similar was Mehmet Scholl for Bayern Munich, who also his body often gave up on him. And Mehmet Scholl got to win the Champions League towards the end of his career, right, with Bayern, and won the European Championships with Germany, but also very unlucky with injuries. And Marco Reus is kind of very similar. And, you know, Scholl played afterwards for Bayern, but that Champions League final 2001 very much defined his career, especially 2 years after that huge disappointment against Man United, right? And I kind of hope, really, really hope that Marco Reus gets that moment with Dortmund. I hope that they get to beat PSG, and that, you know, even if he doesn't play, he's at the club when they win a major trophy. I think that would be all the karma in the world coming back to him, and reward him for all the suffering and working through these moments where his body seemed at an end, right? I think that would be really fitting. So, yeah, huge applause. I think it's also kind of interesting that he starts and plays that game the same day that Kjell Vetjen makes his professional debut for Dortmund. By all accounts, one of the biggest talents in German football. So it's kind of like passing the torch, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's fascinating how Reus has gone from being the boy wonder, the star of tomorrow. You know, him alongside Götze, that were really kind of the poster boys of German football once upon a time. And he's had to kind of, with every passing superstar in the making that the club has scouted and signed and trained and then sold on, he's grown into more and more of a kind of maturing role, to the point where, you know, last season he was almost like Jude Bellingham's almost, you know, tutor in a sense, you know. So it's fascinating to kind of see these players develop and how they kind of mature. And I do think when he leaves the club, regardless of the lack of silverware, whatever you want to call it, he hasn't picked up at Dortmund, he's obviously going to be remembered so well there, because not only was he the guy who picked Dortmund way back then, because when he was doing what he was doing in Gladbach, he could have went anywhere, including Bayern, really. But he chose Dortmund. And I think the Dortmund fans appreciate it. Not only that, but he stayed at Dortmund as well. You know, he went on to develop into a club captain. And not many clubs as well would have really kind of continued with his injury concerns and continued with his rehabilitations and made time for him and accommodated him in their first team squad the way the Dortmund have. And he's always repaid that whenever he's been fully fit. So it's a shame that it's ending, but I think when we look back on it, it's so much more than just how much silverware he won or how many goals he scored. It was just a nice relationship between the player and the club. And yeah, it'll be the end of an era, I'd say.
There's no doubt in my mind that he will have a spot in the Borussia Dortmund Museum, and he's probably going to get a mural at the club as well. And we have to remember, he won a couple German Cups, right? I mean, the DFB Pokal is not nothing, especially in an era where Bayern were so dominant too. Yep. And the fact that he stuck to them, I mean, he's a Dortmund boy through and through, right? And I'm pretty sure that when his time I'm pretty sure he's going to have another adventure somewhere, but I think that he's definitely going to be back in Dortmund afterwards.
Yeah, I should also say that he'll leave the club as the fourth highest appearance maker.
Wow, that's impressive.
Ever for Dortmund, only Roman Weidenfeller, Mats Hummels, who will also probably be moving on as well, and Michael Zorc made more appearances. And in terms of goals scored, according to this little website called Transfermarkt, he's second.
Who's first?
Adi Preissler.
Ah, wow.
That's going back a while.
That is going back a long time. That was around war, right?
Yeah, 1921. Well, that's when he was born, rather. So, yeah, probably the 40s. But interestingly enough, Royce is only 8 goals behind him.
Ooh.
But has 128 more assists. So, if we want to go on goal contributions, I don't think it's probably unfair to say that Royce might be Dortmund's most prolific player ever.
Yeah, although we didn't count assists in Germany until the late 90s.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But I think we could probably say of the modern era, it's probably fair to say. More than Lewandowski, more than Aubameyang, more than Haaland, I think Kagawa's after that. Yeah, so, yeah, his name, his legacy, without doubt, beyond doubt. So, yeah, that's a lovely, maybe a nice way to end, wrap up the show, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And we should probably just kind of give a brief kind of roundup of what we're doing this week. You're taking my spot tomorrow, Tuesday morning, for the newsletter, and your newsletter will be everything on Leverkusen, rather, if
that's
I'm not
right.
mistaken, Manu.
Yeah, because we didn't talk about it on the show because, you know, Leverkusen just did Leverkusen things. It's hugely impressive the way that they play football. You know, I mentioned it a little bit on top of the show, 5-1 against Eintracht Frankfurt, and there was a young Brazilian kid, Arthur, who made he's played a couple games already this season. He made a starting 11 debut. He was hugely impressive. And after being in Germany just for 18 months, gave a full post-game mixed zone interview in German. So you get to hear from him in my piece, and how that's kind of a symbol of how Leverkusen are able to find these guys. And, you know, in South America especially, integrate them so quickly in the squad, and how now Javi Alonso has yet another tool to take teams apart.
Yeah, sounds great. I'm not sure what I'll do my newsletter on, but before that, we'll obviously have two bonus shows this week with the reaction shows to both of the Champions League semi-finals. So please do make sure to tune into that. If you're a subscriber, you'll get the full show for that in your feed on your podcast apps. Matt Ford will, of course, be back with his normal newsletter on Wednesday. We'll have the preview show on Friday. And yeah, I think that's about it, Manu.
Should we do something on when Leverkusen reach the final as well? I think they deserve a reaction show at some point.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. Maybe we could do a live video on YouTube, actually.
Ah, that's
an idea.
There you go.
We'll have
anyways,
a think about it.
You'll get something.
You definitely get something. Well, until then, I shall say we'll wrap this up, and Manu, I shall let you say your fated words to wrap every episode up.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.